Hello, my name is Annette Kirkland, and welcome to Beyond the Gates, How Erdic Research Affects You. We are on episode 11 today, and I'm pleased to let you know that I'm going to have a conversation with the Chief. Today, I'm going to be speaking with General Scott Spellman, 55th Chief of Engineers and Commanding General of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Good morning.
Good morning, Annette, and thank you for having me on Beyond the Gates. I've been fighting to get a spot on this radio show for some time. I just want to say thanks for fitting me in.
Awesome. You know, I pulled some strings and we made it happen. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I just, you know, and I know people would love to know this. Tell me a little bit about your background and your current role at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Sure. So I've been serving in the United States Army for 36 years now, a variety of assignments inside the engineer regiment and outside. And I think what's unique for me is I came to the Corps of Engineers for the first time about 7 years ago. So I was in my first one-star assignment down at Fort Hood, Texas, when the 54th Chief of Engineers, General Bostic, called me and said, "Hey, Scott, I think it's time that you come over to the Corps at this point in your career, and I'm going to send you to Portland, Oregon, to command Northwest Division." And I just jumped at the opportunity. As I said, I had not served in the Corps before, but I always knew it was this unique corner of the Army and certainly a unique capability for the Army, and it has just some fantastic, hardworking people. So I jumped at the opportunity, and I'm just proud to work on this important set of missions that we have for our Army and for our nation around the globe.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir. And can you tell the listeners what the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers does for the nation?
Yeah, so I like to say we achieve our vision. That's engineering solutions for our nation's toughest challenges. That's, at the end of the day, that's what we do. But we do that through our mission and statement, right? And so we have three components to our mission statement. We secure the nation. I'll talk more about that. We energize the nation's economy. And then we reduce disaster risk. So securing the nation, we're doing work today. I don't know if our listeners know this. We're doing work today in 110, not just in the United States, 110 countries internationally. So projects large and small. So think of military headquarters. Think of weapons platforms, training ranges, barracks, dining facilities, all types of support facilities for not only the United States Army, but for our allies operating worldwide. So that's what we mean by securing the nation. Energizing our economy. Same. I'm not sure our listeners know the depth at which we do this. So we are responsible for maintaining 577 federal navigation channels around the United States of America. So think of all our ports on the coast and then all of our inland waterways. There's 577 of those. And keeping that freedom of navigation open in the United States, that's what drives our economy. We're responsible for maintaining and operating 239 locks, right, allowing commerce to go up and down our inland waterways. Huge mission. Mm-hmm. that energizes, as I said, energizes our economy. And then, of course, reducing disaster risk. All that work we do day-to-day in our civil works portfolio, whether it's coastal storm risk management projects or flood risk management projects, the work we do for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, under the National Response Framework, and even think of, you know, the project sets that we did for the pandemic response. So I would just say all of this is incredibly important for the part of the Army, work we do for many of our federal, state, and local partners as well, and our international partners. So I think this agency is of incredible importance, not only to the Army, but to the nation as a whole.
Fantastic. I can already tell, sir, that I'm going to be learning a lot from this conversation. So if you're just tuning in, I am having a conversation with the Chief. General Scott A. Spellman, 55th Chief of Engineers and Commanding General of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So in Vicksburg, we have three types of USAIS entity. We have the Vicksburg District, we have the Mississippi Valley Division, and we have the Engineer Research and Development Center, otherwise known as ERDC. How does the ERDC fit into the overall USAIS picture?
So as you mentioned, a huge U.S. Army Corps of Engineers presence in the city of Vicksburg, Mississippi, and we're grateful to have such wonderful hosts down there across the city. So you all know this, the Vicksburg District, one of our 42 districts doing day-to-day operations out there on the lower Mississippi River. Mississippi Valley Division, one of our 9 regional commands. Mississippi Valley Division is unique because it's civil works only and has, as its name suggests, an intense focus on the Mississippi River from its headwaters up in the St. Paul district all the way down to its confluence with the Gulf with our New Orleans district. But for ERTIC itself, that is our primary research and development arm of the Corps of Engineers. And I like to tell people I have three large programs in the Corps. I have, of course, we have a civil works program, we have a military program, and we have a research and development program. And the research and development arm for the Corps, that's been going on almost 100 years, and that's been of great assistance to us in achieving our vision. Again, engineering solutions for our nation's toughest challenges. And we want to use our research and development capabilities to help us make the right targeted investments when they need to be made in any of our projects. But I would just share one of the challenges that I see is we have to do better in investing in our research and development program. And now the example I like to give is if you go back to the early 80s, say 1983, at that time in civil works, we were investing about 2.5% of our civil works program into research and development. And then I always get some surprise looks when I tell people it's nowhere near that today. So in 2021 and of late, we've been investing not 2.5%, 0.2%. And it's just not good enough. And so I tell people we have a number of challenges across the nation today where we don't have good construction solutions, or we don't have any construction solutions, and we have to get more innovative, and we have to use research and development to help us. And there's just a number of examples. You think of drought, think of all the challenges we're having today with wildfires and extreme weather events. Water quality is huge in a number of places across the country, and think of all the nuisance species that we deal with day to day. Again, we don't always have a good construction solution for it. So we have to invest more. And that is really one of the reasons why I was pushing, we have been pushing on the development of a research and development strategy that will help us make that case.
Fantastic, sir. Well, you know, and you're already jumping into this next question that we have is why is research and development important to you, say, the community and the nation?
Yeah. So it's important because we just have a number of challenges we need help with. So let me give you an example. So we know that the country is in severe drought. We talk about out west, but there's other places where the nation is experiencing severe drought as well. So we have a program called a research and development program called Forecast Informed Reservoir Operations, and what that technology allows us to do is it allows us to, our water managers, to make water management decisions before the water is on the ground. And so we had a pilot on this technology out of a place in California called Lake Mendocino. And the technology is really today it's geared toward these atmospheric rivers, right, that come in off the Pacific and can put a lot of water down on parts of the West Coast. Well, this technology allows the folks out at Lake Mendocino to make better decisions whether or not they need to hold water in the reservoir or whether they need to release water out downriver into the reservoir, because the amount of rainfall that's going to fall and where it's going to fall, we can predict with much greater level of accuracy with using FIRO or Forecast Informed Reservoir Operations. Mm-hmm. Well, that's Lake Mendocino. So we've received authority and funding to take that technology and apply it to two other basins like Prado, and then also Howard Hanson Dam up in Washington State. So that's three. Mm-hmm. But I would like to do why every Bureau of Reclamation, every Corps project, every state dam on the West Coast, we ought to be accelerating our research and development on this so we can apply that everywhere. Because every drop of water, when you're in a severe drought, matters. And that's what this technology allows us to do. It makes every drop of water count. And so I'll just expand this a little bit. Why wouldn't it be great if we could take that same technology and apply it to some of the areas of the country that are experiencing some significant changes in precipitation patterns? So take the Upper Great Plains on the Upper Missouri River, or take the southeast of the United States. What would it take to apply FIRO to those locations? And, you know, working with our great team down at ERTIC, let's take the Great Plains, for example. Mm-hmm. We need some additional data sets. So we need some Great Plains snowpack monitoring data. The team is working. That effort's been funded, and that work is ongoing. but it'll be a few more years of research there. And then we need some additional data sets for rain on snow events. So think of the 2019 event on the lower Missouri River, where we had just a few inches of rain fall on melting snow. And you may remember some of the record tributary flows that we saw on the lower Missouri River from that event. Wouldn't it be great if we could get the data sets and help us be more predictive on those type of events and not have that significant damage that we saw following 2019? That's why I'm excited about research and development, because that's just one small example. There are many others of how this can help us do our job, our mission for the nation much, much better.
I'm Annette Kirkland. Beyond the Gates continues in a moment. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
I'm Briggs Hobson.
I'm Philip Schrader.
And I'm Blake Teller. Our new law firm name is Teller, Hobson, and Schrader. When you need legal assistance, remember, we're your local attorneys right here in Vicksburg. We are involved in our community, and we are here when you need help with your will or estate, or a business or real estate matter, or if you are in an accident. So for any legal service you may need, drop by our office at 1201 Cherry Street or call us at 636-6565. Teller, Hobson, and Schrader, attorneys at law.
Welcome back to Beyond the Gates. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
If you're just tuning in, I am having a conversation with the Chief, General Scott A. Spellman, 55th Chief of Engineers and Commanding General of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. As we get into the R&D, can you tell us about the latest R&D strategy and what is it about?
Yeah, that's about? So in Washington, D.C., if you want to argue for resources, or investment, that's dollars, and I need some more people. In Washington, D.C., if you want to argue for that, for limited federal dollars, you need two things. One, you need a good argument, and so I think we have some great arguments. I just walked you through one with forecast informed reservoir operations.
Right.
And then you need a strategy, and that's what we didn't have. We never had a holistic USACE R&D strategy, a plan for what we were going to do with those additional resources should they be invested. And so that's what I challenged Dr. Pittman and the great team down at ERDC to do, is let's develop our first ever USACE-wide R&D strategy. And to me, they just hit it out of the park. Mm-hmm. We had to have a plan, and I will tell you, we will take that plan has been getting great traction here in Washington, D.C. I will tell you, in WRDA 22, the Water Resource Development Act of 2022, for the first time ever, it's going to authorize us to have a USACE-specific R&D account, and that will match the authority that many of our other federal partners already have. And then, for the first time, both Mr. Connor, our Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, and I will go to the White House, OMB, on the middle of September, and we will make our case to our OMB leadership why this account is important and why we need to invest dollars in the account. This is exactly what the White House wants all federal agencies to be doing, and we're going to make our best case to get after it.
Fantastic, sir. Well, what was the goal in focusing on the top 10 USACE R&D priorities?
So I asked Dr. Pittman, so the USACE-wide R&D strategy, there's a lot of detail, a lot of great detail, a lot of great analysis that went into that. But I wanted him to pick, I wanted us to pick the top 10 things, the hardest hitting topics that coincide with the nation's priorities. And that we tried to put those in our best plain English to help us communicate to the folks that make resourcing decisions why this is important. Mm-hmm. So that's geared for the people that resource us with not only dollars and people, but the people that resource us with authorities, in specifically in Congress and the administration. And as I said, I'm glad to see that that particular provision in WRDA 22 that will authorize us this account. And we're excited about the meeting we're going to have in the White House here in just a couple of weeks to make an argument for the increased level of investment.
Very exciting. So are there any mega projects that embody the top 10 USACE R&D priorities?
Oh, gosh. So there's a number of them. But I think the one that jumps out and that everybody is this, if you're not familiar with the Brandon Rhodes Interbasin project. So this is one of our projects out on the Illinois waterway system where we have been working for years to keep invasive carp out of the Great Lakes, right? So we have them on our inland waterways. And this was one of several locations where this is a critical pinch point for this particular objective. And so how do you do that? We didn't really have good construction solutions, and I'm very proud of the Mississippi Valley Division team that spent a lot of time with ERDC as we are in the design phase of this project right now to look at what are the best barriers or combination of barriers that we could put on that specific piece of infrastructure that would prevent, give us a better potential of keeping carp out of the Great Lakes. So we've been using electric barriers for years on this particular waterway system. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud to report the team has done some great work in addition to the electric barriers with acoustic barriers, sounds. There's some light technology that will be applied. There is a CO2 curtain involved in this particular project, as well as a flushing lock. So we think with those combination of barriers, we're really making what we would say out in the operational army, a complex obstacle as part of this project that we think we're confident is going to help us achieve this particular solution, a tough solution for the nation and all of the Great Lakes states. Very excited as we get deeper into the design on this particular project. The R&D has just been a huge part of this work.
Great. Sir, so what's the biggest challenge that USACE faces right now, and how can R&D help us to overcome that challenge?
So that's a great question. So when I was a few months into my job, the Secretary of the Army pulled me aside in the Pentagon and said, "Okay, Spellman, you've been at this for a few months now. What do you see as Corps' greatest challenge? What do you see as the Corps' greatest opportunity?" And at the time, it was Secretary McCarthy. I said, "Mr. Secretary, it's one and the same. It's our workload, right? We have seen over the past several years historic levels of investment in the programs that we are responsible for. So if you look over the past several decades, we have a headquarters, we have regions, we have districts that were built or sized to execute what had been a $20 to $22 billion workload each and every year. And I would tell you today, the Corps program, these are projects that have been funded with money in the bank, is well over $90 billion. So think about that. Our workload has more than quadrupled. And so that's a challenge, but there are so many opportunities that come with that. And I think R&D is a great opportunity that's going to help us get after this this particular challenge. So just a couple of examples. Think of the, we've been in litigation out on the Columbia River since 1993, right, when several species of salmon were placed on the threatened and endangered list. And one of the challenges that we have, we don't have a good construction solution for it, right? How do you get a juvenile salmon off of a high head dam? Like think of Howard Hanson Dam, or think of Dworshak Dam, or some of these dams that we have down on the lower Willamette Valley. We don't have good construction solutions yet. Now, we have a lot of R&D going into this, and we think it's going to help us get after it. But wow, if we could solve that, you could think of the immense amount of man hours that we could save that getting after this particular solution. I mentioned the 2019 flooding on the Missouri River, but that could be anywhere. Think of the Pearl River flooding that we're experiencing this week.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't it be great if some investments in FIRO would allow us to get more predictive, not only for our operations, but more predictive with the public when we see these systems and the impacts that they're going to have downstream. So again, it's just an exciting, it's our number one challenge, but it's also our number one opportunity. And I think R&D, it has a huge role to play in our ability to take advantage of this opportunity.
I'm Annette Kirkland. Beyond the Gates continues in a moment. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
Hunting season is near, so that means it's time to head to Patriot Motorsports and check out the new Can-Am 2023 side-by-sides from our new lineup. The Can-Am Defender is built extra tough to take you way beyond the daily grind on work sites, hunting trips, in agribusiness, and anywhere you need. Defender is the most capable Can-Am side-by-side ever. Warning, off-road vehicles can be hazardous to operate and are not for on-road use. Can-Am adult models are for riders 16 and older. Always wear a helmet and be sure to take a safety course. Patriot Motorsports, Highway 61 North.
This is Alderman Mike Mayfield, and I want to take this opportunity to first say thank you to the citizens of Vicksburg for your due diligence during the worst of the COVID era. The city of Vicksburg is asking that we all be diligent as we go forward into the future. And don't forget that it's football season, so please think safety at all times. Good luck to all of our local schools on a safe and winning season.
Welcome back to Beyond the Gates. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
If you're just tuning in, I am having a conversation with the Chief, General Scott A. Spellman, 55th Chief of Engineers and Commanding General of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Okay, now it's time to get out your crystal ball, sir, and what's in store for USACE in the future as pertains to R&D?
We're going to put our best argument in front of the White House here in a couple of weeks in an effort to increase the amount of funding that we're putting into our R&D enterprise. I won't get into the any specific numbers here, but I will tell you that it will take us back to, I want to go back to the early 80s as a starting point when we were investing 2.5% of our overall program into R&D. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a huge improvement over 0.2%. But just think about how that compares to what the Army is investing in R&D. It's about 17% of their base budget. Or if you look at the Department of Defense, they're investing about 14% of their base budget in R&D. Our counterparts over in the Netherlands, the Rijkswaterstaat, they're about 4.5%. And think of Apple. Apple, huge innovator out there in industry, they're investing about 4%. So this is a starting point for us, and we put 2.5%. Every year I'm asked for to give the Secretary three options in our budget development process, a high, medium, low, to put it in plain English. But we had 2.5% of our budget in all three of those recommendations, and we're hoping to make our strongest argument here mid-September.
Fantastic. Okay. So as we're wrapping up here, what do you want people to remember from this valuable conversation?
I think the one takeaway I would ask is just a couple of things. First, R&D is important to me, but it's just not me personally. It's important to our enterprise. And I'm asking leaders every time I travel, I'm always asking them to think about some of the problems that we're having and challenge them folks to just think about them a little bit differently, right? Where we've been stuck on an issue for years or where we don't have a good construction solution, open the books, visit ERDC, bring out some of our R&D folks to your region and challenge yourself to think about some of these things in a different light. Because I'm just a firm believer that R&D with the right focus and the right investment can really help us get after some of these sticky challenges that we are experiencing, whether it's climate change, whether it's energy resilience, whether it's environmental sustainability. There's a lot here that our research and development arm can help us with.
Fantastic, sir. Well, I just want to thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today. And you know what? You can come back on the show anytime that you like. So, well, you've been listening to Beyond the Gates, How ERDC Research Affects You. And thank you, General Spellman, and have a great day, everyone.
Hi, everyone. Champions of Health here. COVID-19 is still around, and with cases increasing, we would like to remind you to stay vigilant when it comes to health and well-being. Symptoms of the new Omicron subvariant include but are not limited to runny nose, cough, sore throat, fever, headaches, muscle pain, and fatigue. If you are displaying any of these symptoms or have been exposed, please get tested and follow your doctor's guidelines on isolation. Let's keep our germs to ourselves. Project Champions is funded by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of Minority Health.
This year, don't just go back to school, conquer school. Get CableLink's broadband up to 150 meg internet and unlimited data together for under $25 per month. We make it easy to switch. For less than $25 per month, get speeds up to 150 megs and unlimited data for 1 year. Everything wireless in your home connects best with true broadband speeds and no buffering. And now add AMP for the best whole home Wi-Fi experience installed by our technicians for only $7.95 per month. There's no credit check, no money up front, and no deposit. This year, smart starts at home. CableLink's broadband up to 150 meg internet and unlimited data under $25 per month.
This offer will go as fast as summer did. Don't miss out. Get all the speed you need for school. Visit cablelinks.com/connect or email support@cablelinks.com to order now. Some restrictions will apply. Offers expire without notice.
Now News Talk 1490 and 107.7 FM presents the legendary Paul Harvey and the rest of the story. And now...
Now, the rest of the story. Henry McCarty. He was a likable young man. In fact, some said he was the nicest boy in town. He didn't have the airs of a city boy, they said. Though indeed he had been born in New York City. Neither did he seem the product of a broken home, although indeed his father had disappeared and his mother had remarried when Henry was 13. Immediately thereafter, the family moved west. 18 months later, Henry's mother was dead of tuberculosis. Henry is still 14. He might have grown rebellious and irresponsible, but no, he got a job waiting tables and washing dishes at a local hotel, and he worked hard. In fact, the owner of the establishment later publicly applauded Henry as the only boy who ever worked there who never stole anything. Henry McCarty was the nicest boy in town, one of those rare exceptions who seemed never to require discipline, except one time. And that's the rest of the story. One night, Henry was in the company of a friend when the two boys were approached by the town rascal, a prankster named George Schaefer. George was laughing to beat the band. When Henry and his friend asked what was so funny, George answered he just played a wonderful joke on the Chinaman who ran the laundry. He, George, had swiped a tremendous bundle of clean wash and was preparing to hide it somewhere. Now, it was not exactly clear who convinced whom of what, but the fact remains that at some point, Henry and his friend were either coerced or freely offered to hide the bundle of laundry which George had stolen, and they did. And guess who got caught? The nicest boy in town. The reason we don't even know the name of Henry's friend and accomplice is that Henry refused to name him. Henry accepted the responsibility all by himself. That's where the town sheriff came in, Sheriff Harvey Whitehill. He knew 15-year-old Henry. And history suggests he was much concerned that the nicest boy in town should stay that way. So despite the comparative innocence of Henry's participation in the laundry bag prank, Sheriff Whitehill arrested the boy, put him in jail to teach him a lesson. Sheriff Whitehill even hinted to Henry that a grand jury indictment was inevitable. Well, the lesson went too far. For Henry, envisioning his own stepfather's displeasure, seeing himself disgraced and imprisoned, decided the only solution to his problem was to escape. And he did. He crawled right out through the jailhouse chimney and fled. And that, it is said, was the end of the nicest boy in Silver City, New Mexico, and the beginning of the baddest boy who ever lived. I will not presume to say whether such a dramatic transformation is psychologically credible. We're going to have to leave that to the psychologists. Remaining to be pondered is the history, conscientiously gleaned from the lips of those who lived with him and who professed to know him well. This good boy who ran away one day lived to kill 21 men, they say, before being gunned down himself at the age of 21, having exhausted a bandolero load of bullets and an arm's length list of aliases. Over the years, he called himself many things, but most notable among the names which followed him was the name Billy the Kid. And now you know the rest of the story.